I wonder if that's what it felt like in Las Vegas over the past few days with the NBA descending on Sin City. Man, it's become a sports hotbed, that is for sure. Everything from the Raiders to the Golden Knights, who are now Stanley Cup champions, to future baseball home of the Oakland A's or the A's or Las Vegas A's. I'm not sure what they will call them. I wouldn't be surprised if an NBA team landed there before long, though I feel like Seattle should be first in line for that. And speaking of Seattle, we do have the All-Star festivities that are descending on the Pacific Northwest coming up in the next few hours, actually, with the Home Run Derby Monday, All-Star game on Tuesday. Anytime I get to see more and hear more of Ken Griffey Jr., I am thrilled. He'll be the ambassador for the Mariners and for the city and the All-Star game, no doubt. So a lot on our plates this week. It's some summertime and some summer league. After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too. I've got a unique weekend story to share with you a little bit later on the show, as well as photos to go along with. But that will have to wait, because Victor Wembanyama making his NBA Summer League debut in a Spurs uniform over the weekend in Las Vegas, and he was all the rage, to be sure. So we're excited to welcome Nate Ryan, who's now back in San Antonio for KENS Channel 5, was on the ground in Las Vegas in the middle of what was a white-hot spotlight and a firestorm. So, Nate, I'm going to start with something simple, because you speak for a living. This is almost like a what you did on summer break type of a report when you get back to school in August or September. How would you describe your summer league experience in Vegas?
Honestly, when you think Las Vegas, like, I would describe it as just bizarre, first off. Like, for me, when the plane landed, opening up my phone and seeing Britney Spears, Victor Wembanyama, incident. I'm like, I'm going there to cover basketball, and I'm going there to cover, you know, a rookie sensation's debut, first time on the court. And it was not that for the first 24 hours. I was like, oh, are you kidding me? Like, this is turned into like something you could put out of a movie script. I mean, a international basketball sensation and international pop star. So I would just describe it as bizarre having to chase that down for my first 24 hours. I scratched that off the bingo card for dealing with Britney Spears. Literally, of all NBA teams, like, the San Antonio Spurs operate behind like a steel curtain in a way. They're very private, they're very, you know, by the book, and it's very culture oriented. Britney Spears would be the last person that you would think would be involved with the San Antonio Spurs, but for about 36 hours it was. And then it got into bizarre, into a point of just, honestly, you know, buzz just going around before this guy even stepped on the floor, because everybody's eyes are just on one player. It really didn't feel like summer league. It felt like before, like in the 10 minutes before he stepped on the court, it felt like we were covering the NBA finals. Whoa. Not a game that, you know, didn't really matter from a standings, you know, perspective, because all the hype leading into this guy, because that was some of the hype that went around Victor Wembanyama, that we had never really seen him in the United States. Everything that we knew about Victor Wembanyama was from an outside perspective, from highlights that we saw in grainy EuroLeague gyms and whatever. We had yet to really see him, for the most part, in person on an NBA court in the United States. It was a spectacle to watch.
Well, before we talk about the actual basketball, because it is Vegas and you mentioned bizarre, how exactly does one go about covering an incident between Victor Wembanyama and Britney Spears? How did you do that, Nate?
It was literally like, there's no script for that. I mean, me and my photographer were on our plane from San Antonio to Las Vegas on Thursday morning. We were on the plane, and just happened to be also on our same plane was R.C. Buford, who is the CEO of the Spurs and their communications director. They were also on our plane. Like, they were at the same. I'm like, were they aware of everything that was going on when the plane was in the air? Because none of us have service, obviously. And then the plane lands, and then we, like, the communications director, I see when we land, and I'm like, him, and he goes, "Oh, hey, Nate, how are you?" I'm like, "Dude, how am I? How are you? Your phone is probably blowing up off the hook, man." And like, I have a buddy who works at TMZ, and we don't even really talk to each other a whole lot. He's a nice guy, but I knew that when I landed and I got service again, and I saw a text from this guy being like, "Hey, Nate, I've got something for you." I'm like,
"Oh my god,
why does this guy? Why does this guy have something for me?" I'm like, "He's a great dude, but if he's hitting me up, like, something is totally up." I just knew my day went from, I had to throw out my playbook that I had for that day, and it was just, it went completely by the wayside. But you just kind of, you know, go as by the facts as you would for anything, because we're there to cover basketball. And Victor Wembanyama, he's 19 years old, but he's wise beyond his years. I mean, you talk to the guy, he's speaking in metaphors, he's very profound. He's got a great head on his shoulders for being 19 years old. And when you think of the last 3 weeks, he moved countries. He's been herded around three different cities, New York City for the draft, and then San Antonio, which is now his new home, you know, welcome, and now Las Vegas. And he's got cameras on him at all times. He right now is what Britney Spears was when Britney Spears was 19 years old. Honestly, like,
yes.
And probably Britney knows a thing or two about it. So it's crazy. It's not something I would have expected to cover. That's all of that's before we get to basketball.
Oh, it's like a crash course in journalism. You could teach that at some university somewhere now. Nate Ryan makes a good point about Britney Spears and Victor Wembanyama, but that's, of course, not why people were in Vegas initially. He's with us from San Antonio now, KENS Channel 5, their sports anchor. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. How would you say that Wembanyama handled the actual basketball part once he got on the court in Las Vegas?
I mean, he's a smart guy. He was honest. I mean, his first night on Friday night in game one, he had 9 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 blocks, which in the NBA, that's a solid stat line. He played 27 minutes his first night, and that was with the lack of sleep that he's had. And when you think a lot of these college players, they haven't played actual physical contact games in 3 months for the most part, because their season ends whenever they get knocked out of the NCAA tournament, if they even make the NCAA tournament, and then you're going through workouts. Victor Wembanyama playing in Europe, he's playing against grown 30-year-old men, guys who were the best players on their college team, and now playing in Europe amongst those same guys, but 3 weeks ago. And I think his last game was like June 18th or whatever, and 5 days later he's getting drafted by the San Antonio Spurs. He knew he was going to be the number one pick. And he wanted to play in summer league. That was something he said on the podium. And the Spurs, you know, whether or not it was their goal the whole way to have him play in summer league, I'm not so sure it was, because they want to keep him as fresh and as healthy as possible while, you know, indoctrinating the playbook and the systems that they run. But just his sheer want and his nature of wanting to be, you know, soaking everything in, it just is a total testament to who he is. But he even admitted his first night, he was tired. He said, there was a quote he said at the podium where it was just like, "I didn't even know what I was doing out there." It was tongue in cheek. I mean, because he, you know, he had so much coming at him. The cameras were on him at all times. I was in the gym his first game playing. You would have thought that it was game seven of the NBA Finals.
Like, wow.
Everybody had their cell phones out, you know, taking video of the opening tip off. And like tonight, watching from a TV camera perspective, all TV cameras were on him. Like, they're talking about like another player, but the cameras are still fixated on him because he's such kind of a transcendent, you know, cultural figure, just, you know, covering two countries, and he's a player we haven't seen before. So it's bigger than basketball with him.
Why does he fit with the San Antonio Spurs, Nate?
He fits with any team, just given his skill set and with how tall he is. But with the San Antonio Spurs, especially because you look at the Spurs track record with international players. Tim Duncan was, you know, a guy from the U.S. Virgin Islands. And when you look at Tim Duncan, that's another thing. Duncan was the first ever number one pick to ever play in summer league. And he was relatively schooled in summer league when he played in 1997. He was dominated by Greg Ostertag of the Utah Jazz in 1997. He turned out pretty well. I mean, now his jersey's in the Raptors at, you know, the AT&T Centers. He's in the Hall of Fame. But Tony Parker is a French player, just for one reference. I mean, he's going into the Hall of Fame himself. And Tony Parker, Victor Wembanyama are very close, and they've had a lot of conversations before even getting to San Antonio. There's pictures of Wembanyama wearing Tony Parker's jersey when he was a kid. Boris Diaw was a French player who had a lot of great role minutes through Spurs championship seasons. Patty Mills was from Australia. He came in, and, you know, he had no problem fitting into this culture. All these players who are coming from elsewhere, they, you know, come to San Antonio. Duncan, Parker, Manu Ginobili from Argentina, all those guys still live in San Antonio, and it's totally by choice. They found a home here, and, you know, they're still hanging around the facility. It's very much a melting pot of basketball here, and all those guys have been in Victor Wembanyama's ear, just not from a pressure standpoint, but just, hey, man, welcome to San Antonio. It's an easy place for, you know, you to adapt from. You get your privacy. You're not going out. Fans respect you in the sort of sense of, you know, being in the public, and it's a great place to fit in from. You know, you're cool with all the assistants. There's continuity with the coaching staff. Greg Popovich is, you know, over the age of 70, just signed a 5-year extension. You know, he's not going anywhere. It's very much a culture fit for Wemby. Obviously, the 5 championships are the marking point for it.
I'm glad you mentioned the contract, because I was going to ask you, obviously no retirement in Coach Pop's future. They've had 4 consecutive losing seasons, though, and have missed the playoffs, and that's how they get to Wemby. And yet I remember he said that he's really enjoyed coaching, at least it was around the draft, I think, where he talked about how much he enjoyed coaching still this past season. What is your reaction to his contract extension now?
The players, I'm sure, do, but when they let the media in their practice facility to shoot practice, we all still see Coach Pop in the facility all the time. Like, we see him on the elliptical. He's working out. He's just a guy who loves the game. He's a basketball lifer. And, yeah, the Spurs have not had a couple – they haven't had, winning seasons the last few years. But at the same time, in 2020 or 2022, for the most recent Olympics during the COVID era, I mean, he was coaching a Spurs team that wasn't at the top of the NBA, but he was also coaching Team USA to a gold medal in the Olympics. I mean, he has that kind of credibility where he's won 5 championships. He's the winningest coach in the history of the game of basketball. He's been to the top. He took this organization from the bottom and saw it all the way through. He's not doing it necessarily, I don't think, for the championships anymore. He does it for the relationships. And you look at the product of the assistants that have coached under him. Half the NBA is essentially former Spurs assistants. Will Hardy from the Utah Jazz, Ime Udoka, who just took the Rockets job, Monty Williams played for the Spurs, Steve Kerr played for the Spurs, Mike Brown coached under Greg Popovich with the San Antonio Spurs. His blueprint is everywhere in the NBA, and he's at a point now, too, where in the twilight sort of his career, it's almost like a Mr. Miyagi and the Karate Kid kind of deal, where he's just like, he's this guy who's got all this wealth of knowledge. It's speaking totally from opinion for him, it probably makes him feel younger and takes him back to his earlier days where he doesn't have to worry about wins and losses, and he can just get back to basics and basketball 101. And now he's got this great new young player who, you know, is very worldly and, you know, has all these various profound opinions about a lot of things, but also has got the spotlight on him 24/7. Popovich probably sees that as a cool challenge.
Andy Reid said something similar about Patrick Mahomes when he got into the league, and how now Pat and the challenge of working with a generational athlete, generational quarterback, makes him feel young as well. Nate Ryan is with us from San Antonio. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Other than the Wembanyama buzz, what else were people buzzing about with so many NBA movers and shakers in Vegas at the same time?
It really is. I mean, NBA Summer League has kind of turned into like a who's who. Everybody kind of goes there, whether you're a budding assistant coach or like a video coordinator looking for, you know, looking to network. If you're, just a fan of the game looking for, you know, different who to watch for in the upcoming season, whether you're a current NBA player who's just looking to go and see the next wave of players. You look every single game. It's cool. Like, and they've done this in the past, but now more so than ever. Yeah, it's summer league, and people on these NBA rosters, the players don't need to go. It's not mandatory, but they're all there sitting courtside. I mean, the San Antonio Spurs are playing summer league games with, 75% of these guys aren't going to be on the NBA roster. But you look at the guys who are on the NBA roster, they're all sitting front row courtside for the Spurs. Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sohan, Sandro Mamukelashvili. I mean, they're all sitting right there cheering on the guys that, you know, they might not even necessarily be playing with. It's turned into like a, you know, summer vacation, but also kind of convention sort of deal where you've got fans and players. Like, I saw media members from across the country. I mean, I saw college coaches that I knew from across the country.
Wow.
I was doing taping a segment for, you know, CBS at the end of the night on Friday night at like 11 p.m. And a college basketball coach, Joe Golding, who's the head men's basketball coach at the University of Texas at El Paso. He's a college hoops coach. He's walking out. He's the head coach, and I knew him from my previous job. And I shout out Nate Ryan. They turn around. I'm like, Joe Golding, what is up, man? Like, how are you? It's just one of those things where you run into people that it's just a congregation of basketball fans, minds, people handing out business cards, that sort of thing. It's very, very cool to see all in the ides of Las Vegas, if you will, where when the sun goes down, they all go off and do whatever. And then they're back there at noon the next day.
So what's the one big thing you learned coming out of Vegas, Nate?
That Victor Wembanyama is not just a basketball star, but he's a guy who's going to, you know, move, you know, shape culture. He's a cultural influence. He's on and off the court. He is going to impact the way people buy clothes, way people travel, the way people watch the game. You know, he's got kind of the same aura that a LeBron James or that a, you know, Kevin Durant, but not even really Kevin Durant, where it's like, because Kevin Durant is, he's played for a lot of different teams. I can very much see Victor Wembanyama, especially being with the team he is. I see Victor Wembanyama being with the Spurs for 8-10 years, but also, you know, attracting fans from a whole new sphere that at the NBA that never knew they could reach. And he's got, because he's got the cameras on him at all times, and like his jersey, I could tell you, like, his jersey by far was the most populated out of anybody at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas. I'd be walking around, and I'd be like, oh, where are you from? And they're wearing a Wembanyama jersey. She'd be like, I'm from Boston. I'm from Hawaii. I'm from California. And I would literally be like, are you a Spurs fan? And they'd be like, not really. I just love Wemby. Like, I just want to see Wemby. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's cool. You don't even need to be. It's wearing a Wembanyama jersey. It's like, it's not even just being a Spurs fan, it's a fashion statement now. He's got that kind of aura about him because, A, you can't miss him with his size, but
sure.
B, you know, how the way he talks and the way he carries himself. He, you know, he's very, he doesn't shy away from big questions, but he's also not about, you know, he doesn't say things that, you know, people can sort of run with. I mean, the Britney Spears thing was just, that was something he didn't even recognize what was happening there. It was just, he was, I guess, the wrong place at the wrong time. But the way he plays the game and just how different he is and how mature he is for his age, he's going to be somebody who, you know, he's got that LeBron James sort of effect where it transcends not only basketball, but culture as well.
And Britney Spears is not required, actually, for that. That just happened to be a bonus incident on the top of everything else in Vegas. So good stuff from Nate, a crash course in how to cover a cross between basketball and pop culture. You can find him on Twitter at Nate Ryan Sports. He's the anchor for KENS 5 in San Antonio with a lot of excitement and a buzz around Wemby fever, if you will. Nate, thank you so much for a couple of minutes. I know it was a crazy few days.
Oh, no, Amy, no worries anytime.
Wemby fever. Could it be more than just a summer league phenomena? I like the fact that Nate was able to connect with fans from all over the country and certainly internationally as well. And that is why these various pro sports leagues in the United States want to attract international talent, because it taps into all new fan bases. Think about what Ohtani has done. And he's not the first Japanese player, but every time there is a Japanese player who becomes a huge hit in the United States, there are more and more Japanese fans and Asian fans who not only follow baseball, but will travel to the U.S. to see him play. Now it's Wemby, where it was Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili and Tim Duncan before that, all international stars. Well, Duncan different, but you know what I'm saying. The fact that there are various players here, Giannis being another great example, who come from other countries and other cultures. Obviously, Nikola Jokic, when he goes home and he's not a star after the first week, people stop asking him for his photo. I love that. Luka Doncic, too. And that's just the NBA. Major League Baseball has got its own international flair and flavor. A lot of Hispanic cultures that are intrinsic in baseball culture, but it means so much to these other nations too. South America, Central America. It's amazing how excited these countries get. And I've seen it firsthand. For instance, in Cuba, my travels to Cuba. These are their players. And it makes them want to watch and consume more of the product. Now, in Cuba, that's hard. A lot of times it's on tape delay. But, oh, and the Cuban government sometimes doesn't acknowledge those athletes who've defected. But the people get so excited. And that's what these leagues are hoping to tap into. Grow the fan base with more of an international flair. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, your MVP candidates are rolling in. The Braves finish up the first half as the best team in Major League Baseball. 26 consecutive games with a home run, at least a single home run. Now a franchise record. Do they have one, two, three, four? I don't know how many MVP candidates. And finally, the Rays' long nightmare is over. Seven consecutive losses, but one win right before the break. So we'll dive into baseball a little bit. Love to hear from you again on our social media. If you're out of your work routine this week, maybe it's a summertime week, a vacation or a staycation, or just time off. Thanks for taking us with you. We're glad to connect with you after hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Swinging a ball hit off the end of the bat to left center field. Over and back is Harris to the wall. Gone! Yandy Diaz muscles up. And a swing and a ground ball toward third through. In the left field, base hit, Christian Bethencourt. Taylor Walls helps manufacture a run. The Rays get one back. And now lead 5-2. Swung on and line in the left. That's going to drop for a third base hit of the game for Yandy Diaz. Rounding third, scoring Paredes. Here comes Walls. There will be no relay throw home. Two run double for Yandy Diaz. Tampa Bay in double digits on this last day before the break. And they now lead it 10-4.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The Atlanta Braves have the best record in baseball at the All-Star break, but the Rays finally come up with an answer on the last day before. The All-Stars head to Seattle and the rest to get to breathe. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio, on the Rays network. Zach Eflin finishes the first half, if you will, with a 10-4 record to end the Rays' seven-game losing skid. And even though they stumbled and bumbled and crumbled into the break, they do take this break with 58 victories. That's the most in their franchise history. So Kevin Cash looking at the silver lining.
We're really encouraging and kind of what we wanted, we needed, and we wanted to kind of let Zach settle in, and he certainly did that. But the offense, you know, big at bats. We had reason to be frustrated the last week or so. Felt we were still doing some things okay, just not to the standard that we had maybe set. But to win a ball game and go into the break like that feels that much better. And congrats to that group out there. Anytime you're doing something that is a first time in franchise, this franchise has won a lot of baseball games over many years. It's saying something.
We're heading into the break with our spirits high. Everybody's, you know, great in the clubhouse. We had an awesome first half. But I think it could even be better, you know. Throughout 162 games, you go on skids, you know, things happen. But we're in a really, really good place, as, you know, as a team, physically and culturally. So we're excited to get to the second half and, you know, enjoy these next 4 days and then come out swinging.
So Zach Eflin can see a bright future, a bright summer, rest of the summer, for the Rays. He allows 2 runs on 4 hits and 5 Ks. Yeah, for the Rays, there's a lot to be happy about. But that 7-game losing skid meant they couldn't get to the break none too quickly. As for the Atlanta Braves, what we've seen from them over the past month and a half is nothing short of remarkable. Not only have they taken over as the top team in baseball, they're the only team with 60 wins as we get to the All-Star break. So Travis d'Arnaud with the Braves finishing 60-29 heading to Seattle.
Coming up on 10 years to be in this situation with 60 wins before All-Star break is really special, man. And just happy to be a part of it. And I think the coolest thing is all of us joke around with each other 24/7, even during the game, and we're able to flip the switch and focus in when the pitch is coming, and then right back to joking around. So it's a special group and something I've never seen before.
Would you choose a National League MVP from the Braves? They've got more All-Stars than at any point in franchise history. And what we've seen from guys like Spencer Strider, oh, really impressive. He's not the only one. They've had a couple of different guys that have filled that void since they lost Max Fried. Now, Max made a rehab start on Sunday, first time since May 5th that he's pitched. Remember, he was shut down with forearm pain. Throws the 35 pitches, goes into the second inning. This is Triple A Gwinnett, and maybe a sight for sore eyes. If you're a Braves fan who thinks there's still room for improvement, got to keep the rest of the NL East and the National League in our rearview mirror. Max Fried, a healthy Max Fried for the second half, could do the trick.
Feel great. You know, hot day here, but was able to go out, get my work in, got all 35 pitches of what we wanted, and came out feeling physically really good. So really optimistic and looking forward to, you know, just knocking the rust off.
What's the plan, 35 pitches, wherever you're at, come out?
Yeah, it was two innings with 35 pitches, so I was able to accomplish that.
So we'll see when Max Fried is cleared to pitch again. But, yeah, Spencer Strider has 11 wins at the break. Charlie Morton has 9. Good old Charlie, he is steady Eddie. 9 wins at the break. And then Bryce Elder, who's been another great revelation for the Braves in that starting rotation, 7-2. And he actually leads the team in innings pitched, as well as in ERA among the starters. So those two guys, both Spencer and Bryce, have filled in valiantly. No issues there at all. Can the Braves keep up this pace? Well, that would mean, what, 115 wins when it's all said and done? They were already a World Series favorites, or maybe if you don't want to go favorite, then you go candidate. But would you say the MVP comes from the Atlanta Braves? That's the question we put out on social media. Who are your American League and National League MVPs at this point? So on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or you can find us on Facebook. We'll do a little more in baseball as we head up toward the top of the hour, because not only do you have Ken Griffey Jr. serving as ambassador for the All-Star festivities, but the draft was taking place on Sunday. And remember last week when we talked about surprises, and a lot of us pointed to the surprises on the negative end. Like, what the heck happened to the Mets? One of the worst months in franchise history, probably. But they had 101 wins last year, same as the Braves, and really not relevant at this point, though maybe, just maybe, there's hope for them in the second half. That's how the Padres feel. They believe they're getting their bleep together and will look much different in the second half. I don't have any trouble believing that both the Mets and the Padres can put together win streaks. That's not out of the realm of possibility. The issue, of course, is how far back they put themselves at the break. And the number of teams they have to compete with simply to make a wild card game or a wild card series. Also a great story, the Cincinnati Reds sitting on top of the NL Central as we take the break. And we've talked about them a bunch over the course of the last couple weeks. Or really the last month since Elly De La Cruz made his debut. And I love the combination of he and Joey Votto. You know what it reminds me a little bit of? It's a loose analogy, but when Luka Doncic was drafted by the Mavericks and Dirk Nowitzki was still there, and the two of them, I don't know if they hung out away from the court, but the way that they were kind of bookends to what the Dallas Mavericks were doing, bridging the gap from one era, so to speak, to the next. Not that Joey Votto is going away anytime soon. He's not. But at 40 years old, he's got a new, I would say a new energy, a fresh perspective and excitement about being a member of the Reds. And Elly De La Cruz certainly is the spark for that. So the Cincinnati Reds are a great story too. We're tying a bow on the first half of the baseball season, asking you, who are the MVPs at this point? Again, Twitter, Facebook, our phone number, 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Scherzer is set. Here's the pitch. And Manny gets a hanging breaking ball. Hits it a ton. Deep to left field. Way back. Gonna go! Second level of balconies in the Western Metal Building. And a three-run homer in the bottom of the first for Manny Machado. The Padres jump out in front of the Mets and Max Scherzer. Here's the 3-0. Manny swings, hits it in the air to deep right field towards the corner. McNeil's back, turns around. Gonna go! Petco Porch for Manny Machado. His second home run of the day. And a 5-0 Padre lead in the fifth.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On Padres radio, could we see a surge from San Diego over the second half? Pretty stunning the way the Padres have languished to a losing record at the All-Star break, considering their appearance, well, not just the money they spent and the trades they've made, but their appearance in the NLCS last year, losing to the Phillies, right? So the Phillies go on to the World Series, but the Padres, they spent even more money over this past offseason, shoring up their roster and feeling like they were poised and ready to move forward. Not to mention they get Fernando Tatis back to add some energy, some speed, some skill to that lineup. And yet they're at 43 and 47 with the victory over the Mets on Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Manny Machado with a pair of home runs, five RBI. And yes, the Padres did win 5 of 6 before the break.
There's still a lot left. You know, it's a lot of baseball we gotta be played. And, you know, we just got to continue playing the baseball we've been playing this last week. You know, I think everything's been coming together as a group. You know, early on has been bits and pieces here and there. But, you know, ultimately, you know, this last week or so, it's been all clicking. So we just got to continue doing that.
Think about the guys they have on that roster. They add Xander Bogaerts, Jake Cronenworth, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis, Manny Machado. No, they've got some others too. Nelson Cruz has been hurt, I think. Matt Carpenter is part of that lineup too. They spared no expense in adding big bats, and it kind of felt like overkill. Tatis does lead them in home runs, which is a bit surprising. Not sure that's what they were after. However, he leads them in home runs and in batting average. Machado, Soto, they're part of the mix in terms of getting on base, but just not enough offense from them. Their offense has been a major disappointment. Blake Snell has got an ERA below 3, 132 strikeouts. We know what Josh Hader is capable of. I mean, they've gone out and they have stockpiled pieces. So you could certainly call it a flop or a disappointment, even though, as Machado points out, there's still plenty of room to improve and plenty of real estate left in the season. Mets likely feel the same exact way. Believe it or not, the records aren't that different. Padres are 43-47. Mets are 42-48. Are these the two biggest disappointments of the first half? Well, we'll get to the Yankees here in a second. But theirs has got to have a lot to do with Aaron Judge being, and then there is the disappointment, Aaron Judge being on the IL for an extended period of time. But when you talk about the Mets, theirs is the opposite. It's more about the pitching. And I know the Edwin Diaz injury at the World Baseball Classic was, I mean, that was brutal. And he's not the only guy who's been injured. Justin Verlander spent time on the IL. Max Scherzer's been suspended, but also not as good as advertised. He finishes up his first half. He could pitch the day before the All-Star break because he's not going to the All-Star game. 5 runs on 6 hits, and he is 8-3, but
I just need to pitch better. Yeah, I got to pitch better. There's no other option here. I don't think it's necessarily reinvent the wheel. It's just execute better and be more consistent. When you do that, that's when you can chew through lineups. And right now, I'm just not consistent.
It's so with like this one magic key, there is none. You got to have different things clicking. Like I said before today, when something's not working well, something else picks it up. That's what it's like. Justin was talking about the other day. The really good teams and championship teams said we had flaws. So we had a lot of flaws. Everyone, there's no perfect team or perfect player, and that's why it's the epitome of a team game. The key is when something's not the way it can be, that some other phase picks it up. That's, if you want to look for one key, there's about 100 of them.
Certainly that is the case. There's no such thing as a perfect team, and no team starts out the year ready to win a championship. That would be on paper anyway, and it doesn't matter until you actually get out there and start playing. And then injuries definitely play a factor. What the other teams around you are doing, that also plays a factor. But the Padres and Mets had much higher expectations. Both below 500, roughly 4 to 5 games. Or I guess it's 4 to 6 games. The Dodgers have now taken over first place in the NL West again because the Diamondbacks are backpedaling. And I'm not laughing at Arizona. I'm laughing because it sounds funny. The Diamondbacks are backpedaling. The Dodgers are 0.02 of a percentage point ahead of the Diamondbacks. They have won 4 in a row, 7 of their last 10. We'll see whether or not the Dodgers can flex their muscles in the second half. But the big bads that are the Dodgers and the Yankees have certainly spent a good portion of the first half scuffling. The Yankees actually fired their hitting coach, Dylan Lawson, on Sunday before the break.
I felt like this was necessary. Our offense has struggled mightily, more so than I can recall. The team that we have, I know we, in fairness to Dylan, we have had some injuries without a doubt, but collectively we really have struggled, and I feel like we're best served kind of changing things up a little bit as we move into the second half here.
So right now the Yankees are sitting on a .231 batting average. Aaron Judge could definitely boost that, but, and then 18th in runs scored, near the bottom of Major League Baseball in on-base percentage. It's not just the Yankees hitting, but there's certainly a lot of question marks about the lineup that they put out there day in and day out. And so Brian Cashman says, we're just going based on pure numbers.
It's not the standings. It's the offense. So, so ultimately I just believe that, I just think our players are going to potentially, if we can select the right person, we'll benefit from a change. As simple as that.
Dylan Lawson becomes a bit of a fall guy. And yes, I do agree that a pitching coach or a hitting coach can make a major impact, especially if someone who's played before and has great insight. Not having Aaron Judge puts a damper on all of your numbers, all of your numbers. And it's certainly a huge disappointment that the reigning American League MVP, who had such an incredible 2022, but also the finish and all the excitement over the American League home run record and him being healthy and then getting that massive contract, turning down the offer from the Giants to stay with the Yankees. Wah, wah, wah. Midway through our first show of the week, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.